bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you joined us. Trump just caught a break in Georgia as Fannie Willis' entire case about to come crashing down. Also, the Biden administration wants you to stop trusting your lying eyes and believe them when they tell you crime is not a problem. And in a few minutes, John Birch Society researcher Peter Rykowski joins us to discuss the constitutional outlook on the upcoming budget battle and the illegal immigration issue at the center of it. We have all that coming up. But first, it looks like Donald Trump still has a lot to learn. On Monday, he endorsed former Representative Mike Rogers' bid for Senate in Michigan. Trump said on his Truth Social platform, "Mike Rogers will be a great and powerful senator for Michigan and has my complete and total endorsement. He knows how to win." The only problem is Rogers doesn't appear to be so great. For starters, as a former spook, he's already suspect. He spent several years as a special agent for the FBI. He also sits on the Atlantic Council's board of directors, which is the NATO think tank, which is a major component of the budding New World Order muscle. Rogers also worked with Barack Obama to overhaul the National Security Agency's electronic surveillance programs. One thing we know for sure is our surveillance programs haven't gotten any less intrusive. As a congressman, he served from 2001 to 2014. Rogers managed to garner a whopping 51% lifetime freedom score. That's the percentage of times he cast votes that were aligned with the Constitution. And that's the average. During his 2005 and 2006 term, his score was 35%. That means that he voted against constitutional principles way more often than he didn't. A quick perusal of his record reveals that the man has never met a spending bill he doesn't like. It took us 5 minutes to find all of this, which explains why Senator Rand Paul reacted the way he did. Donald Trump just endorsed the worst deep state candidate this cycle, the Kentucky senator recently tweeted. Mike Rogers is a never-Trumper and a card-carrying member of the spy state that seeks to destroy Trump. You have to ask yourself, who gives Trump this awful advice? Who's next? John Bolton? In the tweet, Paul attached this short highlight reel of Rogers.
I don't believe today, as I'm sitting here, that Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee in 2024. Don't believe it.
I don't think it's helpful for the President of the United States to attack the media.
It's petty, and it's certainly below the stature of the office of the President of the United States.
It's beneath the office in and of itself.
Actions and activities unbecoming of the office of the President of the United States.
Joining me to discuss today's story is Executive Senior Editor of the New American Magazine. Hey, Steve Bonta.
Hello, Paul.
So, where does that guy get his intelligence? Isn't Trump officially the nominee now?
Well, I'm not sure intelligence is exactly the right word we want in this circumstance. But, you know, I'm starting to wonder if Trump is suffering a bit from Stockholm syndrome when it comes down to it. You know, he's so used to being held hostage by these deep staters that he just can't completely break away. I mean, this is, you would think by now he would be chastened by this kind of thing. I mean, it was excusable when he was a novitiate, never run for office before, no political experience, comes into Washington, D.C., the absolute belly of the beast.
Yeah. He's been railroaded from every angle.
Relies on the advice of people that he assumes are decent experts who are supposed to be his allies, who have an R after their name, who have all this good all-American experience in the military and the CIA and all this stuff. And lo and behold, they all turn against him.
Yeah.
You know, and a large number of those people end up, you know, being the signatories of the, you know, the 51 intelligence people who tried to debunk, right, knowing that they were lying, many of them, you know, to try to debunk the Hunter laptop thing, which threatened to derail Biden's electoral chances. I mean, these people are snakes.
Right.
And meanwhile, the people who have been Trump's loyal supporters, you know, the larks of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Gates and all these, you know, these the scary so-called right-wing extremists.
The hardliners.
The hardliners, particularly in the House, a few of them in the Senate as well. You know, he likes them. He's happy to invite them to his rallies.
Yeah, but he keeps gravitating to these losers.
But when it comes to, when it comes time to fill his cabinet, we'll see. I mean, I'm reminded of the time back when Ronald Reagan, it was clear that he was going to be the nominee for the GOP. And back in the day, you know, the late 1970s, he struck people as a breath of fresh air, much as Trump does today. Because prior to Reagan, the last more or less authentic conservative to run for president
had
been Oh, well, that's true. There's been gold war. And before him, I was thinking of Taft, Senator Taft, back in the early 50s. So at these long intervals, you know, someone would come forward who claimed to be actually an authentic partisan of liberty in the Constitution. And Reagan seemed to be in that lineage. And someone whom we quoted in the American Opinion magazine at the time, you know, made the comment, well, you know, we'll find out if it's all just talk, because if he picks George Bush as his running mate, then we'll know he's been co-opted. And sure enough, that's exactly what he did.
He picks the spook.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Reagan, you know, had the same issue. And Trump, you know, for all of his bluster and gruffness and alleged toughness and thick hide and everything else, you know, I mean, we'll see. It's still early, but you know, the 2022 election cycle, he backed a number of people like Mehmet Oz in the Pennsylvania race.
You were watching
purely for purely mercenary considerations. And he's doing, and if you look at the language here, he says, this guy can win. And here's the thing that has bothered me about Trump from the beginning. I mean, I know that he's a media figure. He understands how to stir the passions of the masses.
He's authentic.
Because he knows about popular culture and this kind of thing. He's authentic. So he talks incessantly about winning. And he gets up and he gives these town halls, and these, whatever they call them, the rallies. And half of what he talks about is, oh, we won this and we won that and we won this and we won that. He doesn't actually talk about, oh, I don't know, principles or what they're trying to achieve. He just brags about how, you know, we won this and we won this and we just keep winning and look at these now. You know, it's all braggadocio.
Yeah.
And so this mentality, I think some of that's authentic. It's not just, you know, him, you know, playing himself up, being a self-promoter.
No, I think that's definitely him, but that's a problem nevertheless.
Yeah, but then he goes to these other candidates and he says, I like this guy because he's a winner.
Or because he likes me. You ever heard that one? He does that too.
You know,
that is the most annoying to me. And we are, I mean, speaking for me, we're Trump fans to a degree. I mean, we didn't put this out because
whatever. Qualifications.
With qualifications, yeah. And we looked at his policy and no one else has really come close in our lifetime to accomplishing what he did. He could have accomplished more, however, if he wouldn't have had snakes in his administration.
And be that on him, because yes, I know he's a busy man. He's got a lot of the things going on, but it isn't too hard to inform oneself about a candidacy or an issue or something like that and not have to rely so comprehensively on all on advisors who almost invariably are going to be tainted by the Washington culture. Even if they're, you know, Republicans, conservatives, this kind of thing, they're still DC operatives, a lot of them. And this is what got him into trouble the first time around. He filled his, you know, against the warnings of extremists like us, he did the same thing Reagan did. He filled his cabinet with a bunch of CFR people, you know, globalists. And then he was shocked when they all turned on him.
Well,
you know,
Trump
and a lot of the guys who would have been probably more loyal, like Steve Bannon, he ushered them out because, well, Steve Bannon, you know, he was kind of sloppy and this and that and the other thing. He didn't dress in a suit and conduct himself in a certain way. And so,
now he likes Ben and he sees the light. But like in his first administration, he had people like John Bolton. He had Mike Pompeo, who now says he'd be willing to serve. You got to keep these people all out. H.R. McMaster.
Well, Pompeo was one of the ones who was actually more loyal to him than many of them. But some of these people, you know, the attorney general that he had for a while.
Sessions?
Yeah,
Jeff Sessions?
No, the other one.
Who was the other one?
Anyway, I can't remember. There was quite a revolving door there for a while.
Wow, whole administration was
But here's
like
the
that.
Bottom line. And here's the problem that I have with Trump, okay? The big problem I've had from the beginning. More than the mean tweets. Oh, that's a problem too. But the real issue is he's not well informed, okay? And it's not, this isn't a me being an elitist intellectual type. Okay, although I do a lot of reading, I probably got more time for it than, say, Donald Trump does, and that's fine. He's a businessman, but he needs to be better informed.
Yes.
He needs to read the Constitution and learn about this stuff. I know it sounds old-fashioned, and it's not cool, and it's not, if he starts waving the Constitution
at
his meetings, he's going to come across as being a little bit nerdy, and that maybe he doesn't want to do that. But whatever he does privately, you know, part of his problem is he doesn't have, in many areas, the foundational understanding. His instincts are good.
Yes.
But animals' instincts are good, too. And you can't run a rational republic on instinct alone. You have to have disciplined understanding. And that's the thing that Trump still lacks.
Someone needs to, if someone's listening, they need to get Trump a New American subscription and link to the show. Thanks, Steve. After this, Trump caught a break in Georgia. Is this the canary in the coal mine for the grifter Fannie Willis?
Freedom is the cure.
You're dead on. This is the largest experiment performed on human beings in the history of the world.
The more you know.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination.
The freer you are.
It's murder. They are basically murdering people in hospitals.
The all-cause mortality, we know, is now higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group.
Stay informed on the issues that affect freedom. Get a subscription to The New American today, thenewamerican.com.
If we aren't self-reliant, we aren't free. And if we can't take care of ourselves without the so-called help of government, how much liberty do we really have? That's why the New American Magazine has released a special collector's edition bookazine on this very important topic. It's called Self-Reliance, Foundation of Freedom. America has a rich tradition as being the home of staunchly independent explorers, religious dissidents, and general malcontents who seek to live the way humans are intended to, free. It's time to get back to those roots, and living an independent life is key. In our latest special edition, we cover a number of self-reliance-related topics, including the self-sufficiency of the Founding Fathers, self-reliance lessons from COVID, preparing for a worst-case scenario, financial independence, and the importance of community, among many other important topics. The writers are experts in their fields, and they provide a handy guide to get you started. So go to thenewamerican.com/shop and order your copy. Heck, get two, one for you, another for someone you care about. But even better, for $5 more, you can get our entire collector's edition packet, which in addition to the one on self-reliance, includes Trump World and the Great Reset. Again, visit thenewamerican.com/shop, or you can even order by phone at 920-749-3780 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That's 920-749-3780. Yesterday, Trump caught a break in the Fulton County case as Judge Scott McAfee dismissed six of the 16 charges against him. The judge said the vaguely worded charges lacked legal specifics. He called the lack of legal detail fatal. The judge's order says they do not give the defendants enough information to prepare their defenses intelligently, as the defendants could have violated the constitutions and thus the statute in dozens, if not hundreds, of distinct ways. The order was a victory for Trump and his co-defendants, who have long argued that the charges were vague and arbitrary. But the most serious charge, that of racketeering, was left in place for all 15 remaining defendants. Meanwhile, we're still waiting on Judge McAfee's ruling on corrupt prosecutor Fannie Willis. But this latest legal setback triggered the rabidly anti-Trump media bigly. Listen.
I don't think this ruling changes the type of evidence that the DA is going to be able to introduce, but it does knock out some of the charges. And look, it's embarrassing for prosecutors. It's a screw up by prosecutors when you bring a charge and then a judge throws it out before it even goes to trial. Yeah, there have been several screw ups, frankly, by the DA throughout the history of this case. Going back to the investigative phase, the DA got herself disqualified from a small piece of the case because she created a political conflict of interest. The judge who was overseeing the grand jury removed Fannie Willis from the case. We've seen Fannie Willis make public statements in the church and elsewhere that have now been called into question that I think violate the ethics of prosecutorial rules. And now we've seen six of the charges thrown out of the case.
All right, Steve. So this reminds me of that scene in Home Alone when that girl tells, his cousin tells Kevin, you're what the French call incompetent. Is that what we're dealing with here? A bunch of nitwits with too much power?
Yes. Next question.
Commentary over.
Well, you know, I mean, this is the legal profession isn't what it once was. Let's just put it that
That's
way.
Sad.
And it is. I mean, you know, but law schools, of course, have proliferated, and you know, pretty much anyone can get a law degree if they want. And you know, I mean, there's evidence.
Is that
of this
really
all
true? Because I hear a lot of people fail the bar at least two times before they pass it. Has the bar gotten easier?
No, I don't know about that. But well, I mean, I would assume that it probably has. In,
because
in keeping
Fani
with
Willis
the overall
has
trend of dumbing down standardized tests from the SAT and the ACT on down.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
you know,
it's
they got to bring all the bars down.
I would think so. But you know, Fani Willis is an absolute grifter, as you say, as is Nathan Wade, apparently, as far as I can tell, her entire supporting cast. Now, the implied question is—
This bodes well for Trump, though.
Well,
you would
not
think.
Really.
Unless the judge is incompetent.
If the judge were intent on dismissing Fani Willis from the case and, let's say, best possible case scenario for Trump, dismissing the entire thing with prejudice— he would not have bothered to rule and say, well, I'm dismissing these six charges because they're too vague, but feel free to reword them and reintroduce them if you want. It's pretty clear that he is, in fact, sympathetic with Fani Willis and with her campaign against Trump. He was, after all, a former subordinate of hers.
Well, that can make him even more antagonistic to her.
You heard it here first. He's not going to dismiss Fani Willis from the case, much less... do anything else. He's probably going to say, well, I found this to be very disheartening. There are some things that disturb me, but we're going to get the same sort of legal weasel words that we got in the non-decision against Biden the other week, where he decided, well, we're not going to, he's clearly done some bad stuff, but because he's a sweet old man with a bad memory, we're not going to prosecute him. And that same legal non-logic, I think, or something similar is going to obtain here, where, you've been naughty. I can tell you've been naughty, but hey, this is important and we don't want to disrupt. I mean, he may not say that, but I'm sure he's thinking, realizing that if he dismisses Fani, there is a very real possibility that someone far less interested in, perpetuating this crusade against Trump and his supporters
will pick it up.
Could pick it up. And the whole and he and everyone else involved in this could end up with egg on their faces. If there's one thing judges hate, it's to be overruled, overturned, or otherwise rendered irrelevant. It's not good for their career prospects.
Yeah. Okay? Well,
this is a relatively young guy with a large career ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably, he realizes, deep in his judicial heart that he is a pivotal member of a team that is writing history in this momentous case.
I don't know, Steve.
And all this sort of thing. So, yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, he's not giving out any signals, but I don't think she's going to be dismissed from the case. I'll be happy to be wrong and eat crow on Monday if that turns out to be the case.
Yes, we'll bring some crow if you do, but it's like...
Well, the very fact that he's not made the announcement yet, and we're almost up to 2 weeks, tells me he's going to quietly announce late tomorrow afternoon what he knows is going to be a massively unpopular decision, which is he's going to let her skate. He's going to say, well, I've looked at it and there's some disturbing things here, but it doesn't rise to the level of warranting her actual dismissal, much less, the dismissal of the entire case. That's what I think is going to happen.
I propose it could be indicative of the opposite, because I think the political pressure would make him throwing it out unpopular. And perhaps that's why he's dragging it out. And I thought his comments were pretty forceful, because he's saying that the way they did this could have violated the Constitution and statutes in dozens, if not hundreds, of distinct ways. He's saying, you people are idiots. Look what you would have done. I mean, that is as nice a way as a judge can be forceful. So I don't know. I'm reading into this that he's trying to muster up all the little courage he can, because he wants to do the right thing, and he's just working there. That's my read on it.
Well, I hope you're right. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you did you say that the ruling is supposed to be perhaps Friday? Because
well, 2 weeks ago Friday, he said he would issue a ruling on the Fani Willis thing within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So the clock is ticking, and the fact that nothing has happened now, but he has seen fit already to issue this other ruling, which clearly does signal that he expects the case to continue. Tell us a lot about his disposition on this.
What is this, in your opinion, the most crucial of the cases? Is it, because you had mentioned, and we've talked this two or three times, and I think it's worth emphasizing that this is the one where there is no there's no federal interference that could come through and save the day, right? They can't
well,
be part
in,
of
in
one.
Well, in theory, although it's been said, if it got to the point where Trump is elected president, and they're trying to put him in jail simultaneously in Georgia, I would think the Supreme Court would say, well, we do have a compelling interest here and step in and deal with it and kind of cut the Gordian knot which they've managed to create here. But it is the most dangerous, and it was deliberately, I think the venue for this set of charges was deliberately chosen to be Georgia rather than, say, Pennsylvania or Michigan.
Yes.
I know the Pennsylvania governor has pretty expansive powers of pardon, and that's more than the rule than the exception.
Yeah, well, Shapiro's not pardoning anyway.
In Georgia, some legal eagle out there in the early going figured out, aha, Georgia was one of the states where there was controversy, and it turns out the Georgia governor doesn't have under the Georgia Constitution, that, you know, the Republican governor can't just say, okay, I'm putting a stop to this, I'm going to pardon.
But in Georgia,
X.
They also had that phone call that was conveniently leaked. So that could have played a role too. Thanks, Steve. Next up, don't believe your lying eyes, folks. Everything is great. The Biden regime is gaslighting the public when it comes to the truth about crime.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
For more news and in-depth analysis from The New American Magazine, the kind that you will not get anywhere else, make sure you have a subscription to our twice-monthly print edition of the magazine. No other magazine has been as accurate and for as long about where policy and culture were heading than The New American. You can subscribe online at thenewamerican.com. Just hit the magazine tab on top, and then on the drop-down, hit the subscribe button. Or, if you prefer, you can call for a subscription. Call 1-800-727-8783 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. That's 800-727-8783. If you ask Joe Biden, not only is crime not rising, but it's dropping. This, of course, is asinine. It's also what's referred to in psychology circles as gaslighting, an insidious type of manipulation designed to make you question reality. Elon Musk pointed out on Tuesday that everything that comes out of the White House is a form of gaslighting. He posted a picture of a literal gaslight with the words, "White House Press Secretary replaced by literal gaslight." Right. Because everything they say is the opposite of reality, including the state of crime. In fact, crime is so bad that in New York, they're deploying 750 National Guardsmen to protect people in the subways. When's the last time that's happened? New York has devolved into mayhem. In February, a subway conductor was hospitalized after being slashed in the neck at a train station in Brooklyn. Just days before that, two commuters were attacked by a man swinging a hammer in a Queens subway station. And just hours after New York Governor Kathy Hochul announced she was bringing in the military, another conductor was smashed in the head with a glass bottle. This is in addition to the cop beatings, cell phone theft operations, and general assaults that have picked up. A great deal of this rise in crime is related to the massive uptick of illegals in New York. But if you ask the gaslight in the White House about this, not only will she deny it, but she'll deny it has anything to do with the illegals. Gaslighting is the entire Democratic playbook when it comes to how they respond to the chaos they've created. Last week, 170 House Democrats voted against the Laken-Riley Act, which would have deported illegals who commit crimes. You would have thought that's a no-brainer. The line from the Democrats is that illegals generally commit less crimes than native-born Americans, so stop whining and being racist, because crime is not as big a deal as you think it is. In the meantime, in Pittsburgh, the police are taking a new approach to policing.
Residents of the city will see a major change in the way police respond. They will no longer respond to calls that aren't considered in-progress emergency. That means calls like criminal mischief, theft, harassment, and most burglary alarms will all be handled by an enhanced telephone reporting unit. That means residents will file a police report over the phone. Officers will not respond unless it's an emergency. Also, between the hours of 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., there will be no officers at any of the six stations throughout the city. Call boxes that link directly to 911 have been installed for people to use in case of an emergency. And during the overnight shift, there will be as few as 20 officers to cover the entire city. The chief said today the data supports that.
Yes, it's enough to cover the entire city in those hours when we have 8% of the time people are calling. I'm confident in the decisions that we make that it impacts this bureau and the city in a much better way than we have in the past.
Now, the chief also acknowledging today that some of these changes are due to staffing shortages. He's down to 740 officers, well below the 850 they would like to have.
The chief there, notice how he stuttered. I'm confident this will be better.
Well, you know, I mean, there's... In fairness to him, you know,
he's in a tough spot.
He may be some woke nut job, but I kind of doubt it. You know, Pennsylvania Italian guy. I don't know. I used to live in Western Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh. I know what they're like. Yeah. And the people there, they're rough and tough Appalachian types, law and order, pro police. But what's happened is, and they did allude to it, you know, there's a funding shortfall. They don't have enough staff. It's probably being propelled on the one hand by diminished funding at the state and local level. Why? Because we're siphoning off so much taxpayer revenues in support of all these new woke conceits that have to take priority over, oh, I don't know, things like law and order that government is actually supposed to do.
Right.
You know,
and I'm sure that the whole...
And on the other hand, of course, policing is becoming, you know, when I was a kid, I'm old enough to remember when every little kid went through a phase where he wanted to be a policeman or a fireman. You know, very few sane children want to be a policeman nowadays because everywhere they look, they're told police are evil.
Yeah.
Even now that policemen, and I think, and I support this, you know, typically, you know, wear a camera all the time, record everything that they do. And so now you can see most of these claims of police brutality are just bunkum.
Yeah.
You know, people scream, oh, you're hurting me. And they're just being entitled and this kind of thing. The police generally go out of their way to be professional and have inhumanly long patience, you know, with the way they may be subject to constant abuse and harassment, and they literally can't do anything. You know, the old days when you could chase somebody down and beat them into submission, you know, and that was sort of expected, you know, if you're dealing with miscreants, yeah, you know, as the old comedian line went, you know, the police, you know that if the police have to come and get you, you know, you're going to get your you-know-what beaten. And nobody accepts that anymore. So it's a very, very difficult job.
Well, I don't think they should.
And they're underpaid. You know, and the benefits aren't that great, and you have to go to school for a considerable length of time. You know, it's not you can't become a policeman in 2 weeks. You know, typically you get a college degree and then go to police academy and get all this training. And of course, there are the job hazards. You know, you have increasing risk of getting shot. Why increasing? Because police are more and more inhibited in terms of defending themselves against people.
I think that's the real problem.
The days when you could just, if somebody's going for the gun and you shoot him first, you know that it's going to be might end up in prison for defending yourself.
Yeah.
So I don't blame people for not wanting to be police.
I think that's the scariest thing for these guys. Now, I may disagree with you, the fact that I do see, they used to do that thing, I guess, where they beat the crap out of someone and they'd go overboard. And I'm glad that they don't do that anymore. They should have never done that anymore because police are supposed to be a higher moral ground. But like you said, it's like now it's too scary. I mean, they can't even shoot back without ending up in court and risking being thrown in jail for the rest of their lives.
In spite of the fact that they all carry the cameras
now.
You know, it's just amazing the guff that they take and this sort of thing. And I mean, it's good that they're behaving more like servants of the people. But so I guess what I'm saying is there are a convergence of factors here. On the one hand, you have the woke ideology. On the other hand, which contributes to making being a policeman living hell because of all the new strictures you have to abide by.
Crime is rising.
You know? And on the other hand, the fact that there is less and less money to support legitimate functions of government, of which, you know, enforcement of just laws has to be reckoned among the few genuinely legitimate things that government, at least at the local and state level, is and ought to be involved in.
Well, let's go back to the original premise, because We know the way they're going to treat, and they've already begun doing this. They're not going to admit that their stupid defund the police campaign from 2020 is causing part of this. And they're not going to admit that illegals are causing this crime, even though Kathy Hochul brings in the National Guard and they have the gall to say that illegal crime has nothing to do with it. When's the last time New York brought in the military? Like, I can't
after 9/11.
Okay, right. And it had nothing to do with illegals, right? It was a terrorist attack. Those are the parallels we're looking at. And these people have the gall to tell us that it has nothing to do with illegals and it has nothing to do with defund the police. This is what's gaslighting, man. And it's ridiculous. Nobody, I don't think, believes it anymore.
Well, I mean, and this isn't the first crime wave fueled by immigration, legal or otherwise, that we've seen in our history. I mean, it goes all the way back to the 1800s. There's always that issue with immigration because when new immigrants come in, they tend to come in and they congregate in their own neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. They know they have their own ways and their own clans and their own connections, and oftentimes have trouble, getting their footing in the new society. Yeah. So they're
looked down on.
They look down. So all these factors incentivize turning to crime and things like this. So it's not a new thing, and it's kind of the price you pay for having relatively open door immigration policy. But this is ridiculous. I mean, obviously,
it's never been like
this. Even among you're going to get people who are going to commit crimes who are foreign nationals, but at least punish them and deport them.
Yeah.
That would seem to be a no-brainer. But here's the dirty little secret, and I'm going to summarize it in less than 10 seconds. Crime is politically advantageous for anyone who wants bigger government. That's why the Democrats support it.
Well said, and that is so true. Thank you, Steve. Next up, another funding battle is approaching. JBS researcher Peter Rykowski joins us.
If Americans want to remain a free and sovereign nation, more people need to understand the principles and values that built this great nation. At the John Birch Society, we have the organization, the plan, and the resources to do just that. Our founder, Robert Welch, said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org to learn more, including how you can get involved to work locally and impact nationally. Join the John Birch Society today.
Peter Rykowski is a researcher for our parent company, John Birch Society, and he joins me to discuss the upcoming budget battle and a core issue at the center, illegal immigration. Hey, Peter.
Hi, Paul. Great to be on.
So we got a lot of things we're always talking about, watching and whatnot, and so I'm glad that you've been keeping tabs on this. I know that it's also part of your legislative alerts job. When we see budget issues and things like that, votes coming up on, we send out legislative alerts. And by the way, if you haven't signed up, you go to jbs.org and do that. But tell us what's coming up and what's at stake here.
Yeah, so there is another major funding battle coming up in Congress. So what just happened was on March 8th, Congress passed appropriations bills for a few various departments, agriculture, interior, a few other departments.
Not defense?
Not defense. That's coming up. Okay. That was on March 8th. That was for part of the federal government. And now on March 22nd, the remaining portions of the federal government, the funding will run out and Congress is going to, they're negotiating right now funding for the remaining parts of the federal government, including departments of defense, Department of Homeland Security, Health and Human Services. So in other words, the departments that are a lot more significant in general, but then also specifically for related to immigration and, the illegal, immigration border crisis that we're seeing, along the southern border.
The Biden administration says there's no crisis. Are you telling me there's a crisis, Peter?
Oh, there's anyone who goes down to the southern border will see that. I mean, the Biden administration, they are in total denial of what's been going on.
Liars. They're absolute liars. They know what's happening. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go on.
Right.
So, yes, we agree. There's obviously a crisis. You can pull it up. Anyway, so we got this next deadline on the 27th, and coincidentally, it involves all the defense spending. So are they going to try some shenanigans here that make it hard to say no?
Well, what usually happens is the Republicans will talk tough beforehand, and then ultimately they'll just go along with whatever the Democrats want. So what the Republicans are proposing...
That is what usually
happens. unfortunately. But what they're proposing right now for the spending bills is to end funding, for example, for the Customs and Border Patrol one app, which is an app that they've been using This app was launched in 2020, so it's brand new, but the Biden administration has been using it to allow illegal migrants, people who shouldn't be in this country in the first place, basically to set up an appointment with Customs and Border Protection, and then they show up at the border, and then they're allowed into the country.
They're already expected. They're like, I made my reservation.
Right, and otherwise they wouldn't be allowed in right. the first place.
It's
and not
insane.
Only that, but then they get work permits once they're in the country. And these are people who, if they didn't go through this ridiculous process, they wouldn't be able to come into this country in the first place. So basically it's sort of legalized catch and release in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the Republicans want to defund this app, so then they'll have to just go through the traditional process where the rejection rates are a lot higher.
Okay.
Another thing that they're talking about is defunding some of the policies preventing ICE and preventing Customs and Border Protection from doing their jobs in patrolling the border, deporting illegals, doing other law enforcement activities. So, and there's a lot more. Whenever the Biden administration asks for funding to supposedly solve the border crisis, basically, in reality, it wouldn't solve the border crisis. It would just allow the administration to take in even more illegals and migrants than they have been doing before.
They're very crafty, and because they don't tell the truth about it. So when they say it's like, look, we've offered to increase funding for border security, what they're not telling you is what they want to increase funding for is to bring more people to process. It's never to like actually stop to secure the border. They're liars. Did I mention they're liars? All right, go on.
Yeah. So, I mean, if the Republicans were to propose funding to increase deportations, the Biden administration would fight that tooth and nail.
Can't have that. So, no. If they want to secure the border, they sue them like they did with Texas over and over. They'll cut the razor wire down and whatnot. So where do you see this going? I mean, how tough is Mike Johnson, and is it just the House Republicans? Well, I guess this obviously originates in the House. It's a spending issue.
Yeah, spending bills originate in the House of Representatives. They have the power of the purse. Which is really powerful. They have the ability to basically control what the federal government can and cannot do. So it really depends on the willingness of Congress to actually go through with this rather than cave at the last minute, as what happens so often. Mike Johnson's in a tough place. They only have a two-seat majority, and many of those Republicans are very wishy-washy anyway.
Yeah.
But it really shows the importance of why everyone, all of us here, need to be contacting our U.S. representative and telling them.
Doesn't this give more leverage, though, to the hardliners? You know, because this is the way they were able to oust Kevin McCarthy. This slim margin has always been, or not always, but it has, in some instances, been leveraged by the constitutionalists. So I would imagine, have you picked up anything, any semblances of hardliners saying it's like, okay, well, we're going to get in the way of this, because I know the hardliners are ticked off, the pundits and alternative media, whatever. It's like, this is how, if you don't close the border, you don't seal the border, there's no money, no more funding. Are you hearing any of that? Or is your take, are you feeling like this is going to end up more or less the same way it's always ended up?
Well, the Freedom Caucus is very angry. I mean, they are fed up with the continual compromises, continually caving into what the Democrats and what the Biden administration is wanting. So they are going to fight tooth and nail on this, as they have before. The question is, will the House Republican majority, the leadership, will they go to the Democrats for help?
Which is what they've done before.
As they've done before, which takes out the Freedom Caucus from the equation.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's likely. Sounds to me like that's really likely to happen. That may be what the scenario is going to turn out to be, isn't it?
More than likely.
Wow. Well, that stinks. So either way, though, we want to help put some pressure on these folks, right? And this is where we come in. You guys do terrific work in the legislative, the research team over there at the John Birch Society. I don't know if people don't know. These guys put out the state scorecards. They put out congressional scorecards. And we put out these legislative alerts, which you can get either through text, you can get on email, or you can get all of the above. And we make it so easy to contact legislators. Did I give it all away there, Peter?
Well, you mentioned a lot. I mean, we rate members of Congress and how they vote. And then we tell people about what's coming up in terms of legislation, this being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really important to contact members of Congress. One example, when Mike Gallagher, the representative here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, where we're he's talking. Our guy. Yeah. He won't be for long, though. Go
yeah,
on.
He voted against impeaching Mayorkas, the DHS secretary.
Mm. Yeah.
And then just a few days later, he announced he wasn't running for re-election.
Yeah,
because
it probably has something to do with my phone call. It was pretty mean.
He saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he received a deluge of calls. And, you know, even that's a good point because I want to get your thoughts on this. It's like sometimes even if we don't necessarily get what we need or what's best for the country, it still works out in a way to sometime where so much pressure, if the pressure continues building on these rhinos, neocons or moderates, you know, well-intended moderates, but, you know, with bad consequences nonetheless, at some point the good result is they'll leave and maybe we can get another guy. And so maybe next session, you know, when we approach some a similar battle, now we have a little more firepower, right?
Right. Yeah. Through the legislative alerts and then also through the scorecards and the Freedom Index, we're building an educated electorate and an electorate that knows how their legislators are doing and an electorate that knows the, you know, founding principles of our country. What they're going to do is they're going to pressure their legislators to vote better. And if those legislators will refuse to vote better, they'll be replaced by better legislators.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I like the way you put it. I like the way we're looking at it is because, again, some people might be disillusioned and for good reason. Things aren't always, for the most part, I don't think they do go our way. But we also have had more things go our way. But at the same time, this is a long-term game plan. And we have to look at it that way as well. And like we've been saying, it's like doing this, we may not get the victory next time. And hopefully we do. Hopefully we do. But even if we don't, that doesn't mean it's not worth the effort, huh?
Right. It's a long-term goal. It requires all of us to put in a lot of work, but yep, it's worth the effort.
Peter Aikowski, thank you so much. Everyone, go to jbs.org, take action, and you'll find legislative alerts. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of New American Daily. Remember to visit newamerican.com for more truth behind the news, and we will see you tomorrow.